The show you're about to hear is a member of the Plains Talkers Podcast Network. To find out more, go to PlainsTalkersPodcast.com.
Plenty of decks don't get to draw three cards for one mana.
Well, I mean, all the good ones do.
Yeah. And like, hey, we were trading one for one, and I've drawn eight cards.
Just done.
GG. It was one of the pinnacles, one of the highlights of my Magic career, was getting to do coverage with Anurag Das, the man. Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Matt.
And we are Cantrip Cartel. We're proud members of the Planeswalkers Podcasting Network, and we're here to talk top fours, 3-0s, and second takes.
Yeah.
How's it going, Matt?
Doing just as well as I was on the first take.
Oh,
we had a little technical difficulty.
They don't know about that.
Yeah, but they do now.
Oh, and Magic. We're going to talk Magic at some point.
Yeah, we'll eventually talk Magic. 10 minutes ago, we touched on some topics like Dragon Ball Z, superheroes, and Japanese history.
Eastern culture and fighting techniques.
All of that's actually true, but none of it will be included.
Here's what we'll do. In the Patreon episode, we'll rehash it real quick.
Right.
So if you're really curious, go subscribe for one day. Just go throw $5 at it, and you can listen to the... Yeah. We'll rehash it in our Patreon episode.
But yeah, we had a little technical difficulty, but we're back. I think a more professional podcast probably wouldn't bring it up, but who cares? We're just two guys in a basement.
I think everyone that's listening is fully aware of exactly how professional we are.
Medium to low.
Yep.
So, yeah, had a couple days off, had Monday and Tuesday off this week, or yesterday and today. Played some video games, been playing some fighting games, played a little bit of Shredder's Revenge. That game's actually a little bit harder than I thought it was. Well, I shouldn't say than I thought it was. When I first got it, I played through it, the story mode, which is kind of like a more modern take on it. So it's like, you know, there's a map with levels and you move around and it saves in between and like you progress through the map.
Is it still a side-scroller?
Yeah, it's a side-scroller beat 'em up.
Okay.
So then I was playing through the arcade mode, which basically is you have to beat all 16 levels without, you know, losing all your lives, and there's no saving or anything.
Is that kind of like how they used to do the Mortal Kombat tiers or trees or whatever? Like, there'd be a Mortal Kombat, like the old ones, like Mortal Kombat 4 or whatever, and you had to, like, it was, like, stacked.
You'd climb up the tower. That's effectively how the beat 'em, the arcade mode is. It's just level after level.
Yeah.
And if you run out of lives, you're done. Kind of like the old school ones, but they have both modes in there for people who want like a more modern experience.
Did you try,
if you just want to play arcade mode.
Did you try up, down, left, right, A, B, A, B?
I haven't. I didn't even think about it, to be perfectly honest. I didn't try the Konami code.
That absolutely needs... If anything, all that code should do is just be like, make fireworks go on the screen. Like, you found it!
Or like, not today, bud.
Yeah, something like that. They have to code in.
Realistically, it should go like, cowabunga! Or something like that.
They should code in, at least to recognize. Was it up, down, left, right,
it
left, right,
A, up,
B,
down,
A, B?
Yeah, up, down, left, right, B, A, start.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. Sure.
Yeah. And there are slight variations on that, depending on the game. That's the one that worked for Contra.
Gotcha.
So, like, Contra would slide in, if I remember correctly, the screen would slide in from the right, coming in from the right, and you had until it was centered to put in that code.
Oh, okay.
And if you didn't beat it, you had, like, you know, 3 to 5 seconds.
Yep.
Again, I don't remember how long. That's how long you had to put in that code, and it gave you 33 lives or whatever.
Well before my time.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things. The Konami code is so, like,
gaming
history.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm aware of it, even though I started playing games, like, for realsies in, like, the mid-2000s.
Yep. I still remember some codes from Twisted Metal 2. I don't remember exact... So there's a different ways you could, like, turn on infinite ammo for your gun. So you'd hold, like, R2 and L2 or whatever and be, like, up, down, left, right, right, left, down, up. And that would give you, infinite rockets.
If you gave me a PS2 controller or a PS3 controller, I bet I could remember some of the Grand Theft Auto, like Vice City cheats.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's just muscle memory.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
I used to have, the way we used to print out like MapQuest, I used to have printouts of the codes for Grand Theft Auto and all the different combinations of stuff you'd do.
Yep, I was, so when I was growing up, we didn't have internet at my house.
Yep.
Even well after the internet was a thing. So I graduated in 2004 and we still didn't have internet at my house.
Yeah.
But my high school was relatively close to the library, and my mom actually worked there. So a lot of times I would go, I'd leave school, go to the library, log into their computers, and use their, you could do like 10 cents for like 10 pages or something. It was like a penny a page to print. And I just had a binder with like sorted codes of just like every game I owned and every game my friends owned, just in case they wanted. So I was like just sitting through Cheat Code Central, cheatcc.com, just downloading codes and strategy guides and all that kind of crap.
Man, what a time.
Yep.
So now you just now most games don't even put cheat codes in anymore.
The cheat code is your credit card number.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
That's how WotC puts their cheat codes in.
Well, that was one of the things I really liked about Shredder's Revenge. Not only is the game only like $25, which it's not a super long game. There's 16 levels.
I think $20 to $25 is what I pay for like between 7 and 12 hours of content.
Yeah. That's pretty much where it's at. It takes about probably there's 16 levels. I don't know exactly how long. Like if you were speed and rushing, it wouldn't take long.
Yeah.
But your first time through, it takes a few hours to beat. And there's 6 characters. There's 3 difficulties.
Yeah. Okay.
Stuff like that. But when you beat the game, you unlock Casey Jones. It's not a DLC.
You just get
a character for beating the game. And I was like, well, that feels like
how games work.
How a game should work.
Yeah.
Like.
So. Not in 6 months you get an option to buy a DLC pass.
Right.
Or if you get the season pass, you get the special Casey Jones skin.
Right. So far there's none of that.
Yeah.
That's
one of the reasons, on top of Elden Ring being a very good game, one of the reasons people talked about in the gaming community why it was so popular is it's just a game. You just give FromSoft $60.
And you get a complete experience.
And you have everything in the game. It's all there. You got to go get it, but it's all there.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we've really missed out on. Supposedly, I've heard that's a Tiny Tina's D&D adventure or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was like that where, and I didn't get a chance to play it yet, but you just buy the game and you have the game. Or at least you have, you know, so much of the game that it doesn't fucking matter if there's a little bit extra.
Yeah, the Gearbox and 2K are really bad about that with Borderlands.
Yeah.
It even started with Borderlands 1. So what they did, Borderlands 1 came out and it was very small, but there is technically a DLC and it's like packaged in there. It's really weird. But like every Borderlands has launched with day one DLC.
Yeah, that's not good.
And it's just like, just put that on the disc, guys.
Yep. That's what I would prefer.
Yeah. And then they all have like a bunch of expansions. Now, I will say most of them are worth getting.
Yeah, a lot of them are good. That's most gamers don't complain about DLC.
Yeah.
They complain about either bad DLC or DLC that should have just been the game.
Yeah.
Like the equivalent, like, I mean, it's not exactly this, but a lot of modern games, like, the ending is in the DLC. And it's like, that's not where the ending belongs, guys. The ending belongs in the game.
That I paid $60
for. That I bought.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to make a side story or a second ending or an extended cut, but yeah, they start hiding the ending in the DLC. That's not what I want.
Yeah. There was a...
That's a bunch of bullshit.
Just as a quick tangent, since we're on the subject, you and I have talked about it a little bit with Noah as well, Diablo Immortal.
Oh, I was going to mention it.
There was a dude, it's like $500,000 to max out your account.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's hilarious.
Like, I'm just like, yeah, I have no interest in playing that. Diablo 2 Resurrected came out, and it's Diablo 2, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And there's none of that.
There's so much hate. So, have you watched enough about it to know, like, the payout, how the mini transactions work in it?
No.
I mean,
I've just looked at the numbers.
So I've just seen TikToks. So here's a premise of how bad this is. So you go through a dungeon.
Yep.
And you fight a dungeon or a raid. At the end of that dungeon, what do you expect?
Some sort of reward. Loot.
How about your reward is the opportunity to buy something?
Right.
Because that's what you get when you complete the raid. And I don't think you even buy it. I think you have the opportunity to roll for it.
It's a loot box. You beat the dungeon and you get a loot box.
I'm pretty sure that once
you
complete this difficult part of the game, you are graced with the opportunity to input your credit card and spin the wheels to see if you get the item you need.
Right. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Could you imagine playing Final Fantasy 11? What was he playing? 7?
The online one's 11.
Well, yeah, the one you've been playing where you're like, you re-roll, you fight the same boss 37 times.
That's 11, yeah.
I think it's almost like that's what they're dealing with in Diablo Immortal, and it's put just the worst taste in everybody's mouth. It's an atrocity.
It's basically peak pay to win. Well, it's the inevitable conclusion of
and
all
it's
this.
It's right on the back of Blizzard coming out with Overwatch 2. And every single person that I've heard talk about Overwatch 2 has said, this isn't Overwatch 2. This is like, at best, Overwatch DLC. Overwatch 1.5.
Is it officially launched?
It's soon. Or you can buy.
It's
you
in
can,
like
you,
an open
can
beta
buy it.
Or something.
You can. Oh, it's not open.
Gotcha.
No, if you buy the game, you can get access to the beta.
I've done that a couple times with games I know I'm going to play.
What I'm saying is,
yeah,
like it's not launched, but they're raking in money on it. Like, yeah, if I take my account and I upgrade it for $40, then I can play in the beta. And like, I think they added a few new heroes. They added a 5v5 instead of 6v6.
Does it have all the original characters?
I think it has the original characters.
So it's just a $40 DLC.
That's what people are complaining about mostly.
Thing is, I wouldn't even be upset if they did that. If, like, to be perfectly honest, I think that's a good approach to first person shooters, where it'd be like every other like, so you come out with Modern Warfare. Modern Warfare, quote, 2 should be a giant expansion to Modern Warfare.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you're like, you get a little bit more value out of it and you're a little more familiar with it. And then when they come out with Modern Warfare 3, it's a whole new game.
Yeah.
And then Modern Warfare, like, that wouldn't bother me if they were like, hey, we've got this cast of characters that everyone loves. Let's just add twice as many maps and a few more characters and sell
it. All your friends already have the game. You already have your hours in. You're already hooked up together.
You know how to play. Like, you don't have to completely relearn a game. You just get a ton of content.
Yep.
I mean, that's basically how MMOs work. Like, you buy the base game, and then WoW is a perfect example of this. You play vanilla WoW, and then they come out with Burning Crusade. If you want to keep playing vanilla WoW, you're fine. All the content's still there.
Yeah, but you also can upgrade to the new version.
You upgrade to Burning Crusade. It's got a whole new area. The level caps increases. There's new dungeons and raids and all kinds of stuff.
But they don't sell it as World of Warcraft 2.
Right. It's just World of Warcraft, Burning Crusade.
Yeah. Yeah, they have sold this as...
Which is probably where they got the idea. They own them both.
Yeah. They've been selling this for years as Overwatch 2.
Yeah, and it's not... the perfect example of this, unless you're going to compare it to, like, a fighting game.
Uh-huh.
Fighting games, typically speaking, have, a continuation of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of, like... An Overwatch 2 should have an entirely new cast.
If it's going to be a new game.
And you could maybe keep 2 or 3. Like, you keep the big ones that everybody knows, like Tracer or Mercy or whatever. Like, the
Tracer,
icons.
Soldier 76, Reaper. Yeah. Basically the original group that then blossomed into Overwatch.
Yeah.
Hear me out, we could probably get more money and do less work if we just make a few maps, make a few characters, and then sell a full price game.
Yeah. Hard pass. So, other than that, yeah, I played in the Monday Night Pioneer, went 3-0. Had a great time.
I made this joke before, but there is no living with now. He's officially gone 6-0.
Apparently, I'm too humble.
I know he's fucking thinking it. I know he's thinking about how good he is, and he's 6-0 and he's undefeated.
The funny thing is, I'm not.
He's
just
not
going, hey,
it.
I had a pretty good time.
And now he's just walking around because now he's smug because he's humble about how fucking awesome he is.
Nope. Going 6-0.
Well, I made it to the top 4 of a modern event, so fuck you.
Yep.
So we told everyone last week I was going to play head-to-head games with Ethan from the card shop, and we spent, because this was Ethan's first event ever, which is why he wanted to go. He doesn't play modern, but he was like, I kind of want to go see a 1K just to see what, like, rules level enforcement is. And I was like, well, I want to go play some modern. It's this little fun thing to do. It'd be a fun weekend. And I spent 2 weeks being like, we're just going to show up. We're going to go 0-3 and drop, because that's all I ever do, it feels like, is I just show up. I go 1-2.
Give some people some money and leave.
2-2, and I'd fucking leave, because that's what happens. Long behold, I make it through. We only had 70 people show up, so it was 5 rounds of Swiss. I make it through the 5 rounds of
Swiss.
How
many people? Sorry?
17.
17, gotcha, cool.
Go 4-1, get the top seat, win first round of top 8, and then we all agree to split and take our prize money and leave.
There
and
you
it
go.
Was one of the coolest things ever, because I have never gotten to be, like, sitting down. I've done decent online. I've done okay in leagues. I've done okay at, like, Friday Night Magic or playing with all our friends. But to go to, like, a legit tournament and, like, actually just kind of sweep it, felt pretty good. So I was playing Esper Reanimator, which is by far my favorite deck in Modern. I have played many of them. I only owned that one, but I played a lot online.
Yeah.
I am quite partial to Twiddlestorm. Twiddlestorm is really fun. If you're looking for Twiddlestorm content, check out Bryant Cook Twiddlestorm on YouTube. He's where I've learned all my deck lists and all my strategies. He's very, very good at it. I won't do a whole thing about it, but what I will do is just give you a quick rundown of how I did. So round one, I beat Crashcade 2-0. The person I was playing against, it was also his first tournament. So I don't know what was in his hand. I don't know if he played poorly. He definitely mulliganed poorly because I didn't see any counter magic between game one and two.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of stomped him. I think game one, he ended up getting some rhinos out, and then I made a grief and ephemerated it, and I was like, hey, you can sack those.
Yeah.
And they were gone. Game two, I lost to Is It Storm? So there's a Storm deck based around things like, was it Goblin Electromancer and...
Cost reductions.
And
then
used
like the red rituals effectively?
So using the red rituals, and then it's Grape Shot paired with Remand. So
gotcha.
Grape Shotting, remanding it back to his hand and Grape Shotting again to help up Storm counts. With a wish board, the real card Wish.
That's a cool deck.
It was cool. I lost because in game two, I decided I had one extra turn because I opened up with a Leyland of the Void because he's very Past in Flames based deck.
Yep.
I opened up with a Leyland of the Void and I thought I could turn three, cycle a Moldrifter and get ready instead of Fatal Pushing his cost reducer, and I was wrong. He stormed off. Now I did get lucky. He stormed off and made empty the Warrens for 30, and I did have the white creature I reanimate that gives you protection from a card type.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it is right now.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
but
it's like a 7-mana 7/7.
Yeah.
You get protection from a chosen card type. And I chose creatures, and eventually I had 3 or 4 turns to... I probably had 2 or 3 turns to dig for an Ephemerate, and he was able to basically dig into a spot where he could make a storm count big enough to Grape Shot.
And just, yeah.
Grape Shot a couple times and kill it. So that kind of sucked. Felt bad. Definitely misplayed there. Round 3, I beat Murktide. Is it Murktide? In a really close game. So game one, he actually was a great game until he played Murktide, and I just lost in 2 turns.
Yep.
And I felt bad.
That's what Murktide does.
Kind of got salty about it. We had a really fun back and forth. We're trading resources. I'm killing his things. He's countering my things. And then he just played Murktide, and I couldn't find a kill spell in 2 turns. And I was like, oh, cool.
I remember this.
Yeah. So then game two, we both opened up Mold of 6. I look at my hand, and this is very casual, so out loud I go, man, I just cannot keep a 1-land hand. And I put it back in, and my opponent goes, you know what, I think I can keep a 1-land hand, I'm going to go for this. And that motherfucker died with 1 land on the field. He cast 2 spell pierce, he spell pierced 2 shitty cards,
yep.
Did nothing the whole game. The turn he tapped out for a DRC, I slammed a Murktide, or not Murktide, an Archon of Cruelty.
Yeah. Cool, yep. Here's your thing that produces mana, it's dead.
Yeah, so that was... We had a little chit-chat about it because he was the person who'd brought another person who'd come to their first tournament.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about, like, you know, obviously you make those decisions, but that's probably the wrong decision. You shouldn't make that. And I got legitimately rewarded for mulling to 5 instead of keeping the 1-laner that looked good. And then game 3 was tight. The game 3 ended with me going from 2-1-4-1. And basically boiled down to if he had drawn his lightning bolt literally 1 card sooner, I'd have lost. Just 100%.
Yep.
And that was a pretty cool game where we got, you know, it was very, very close, and I pulled it out with, I like to think, some tight play. Game 4, I fucking wrecked Affinity. I didn't play your Affinity list, I played somebody else's. And it's funny because when me and Ethan were playing, Ethan actually has like a way positive record against me with your Affinity list.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, we played a couple times and
I'm usually a bit ahead of you. This guy had no fucking chance. This guy, like, turn one, or it was
an 8 cast kind of list?
It was almost the same.
Gotcha.
A little different, but almost the same. He had, like, Esper Sentinel, so he had white.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes, like, turn one, play, like, 2 creatures. Turn 2, play, like, another creature, draw, like a Thoughtmonitor, draw some cards. The end of his turn, I go, yeah, Solitude, Ephemerate, kill, kill, kill. My turn, discard Archon. His turn, does nothing. My turn, Archon.
Yeah.
GG. And then game two, I just had a great hand on the draw, so I was like, I had a okay hand, but I was like, sure, I'll risk it. Draw, end step, discard, and then it was just land, Archon. He's like, yeah, scoop, I got nothing. Just walked all over him. And the top 8, I played Living End. Living End's a really tough match for them because, one, I can be faster than them, and 2, I can also just stash my Archons in the graveyard, and then Living End gets pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, if I have 1 Archon, and if you reanimate 3 creatures, well, you're going to lose 2 of them.
Yeah.
Because Archon's going to enter, sack 1, attack, sack another. Like, yeah.
And then you still have the 6/6 to deal with.
And you still have a 6/6, and I've drawn multiple cards off this.
Yeah.
So that was a really tough matchup for him. It was actually a local guy named by the name of Adam that we play with sometimes on Mondays. But he didn't care. He was locked for top 8 anyway. Doing that and based on some other intentional draws, I got first seat, went into the top 4, played against 4-color Money Pile, which I was really scared of. It was a very scary match. Game 1 got my butt handed to me, just a mold of 5, and he just had the game on lock every single time. And then games 2 and 3, played through a lot of hate. Didn't play through any Leyline effects, but played through multiple Endurances, played through a few counter spells, multiple Planeswalkers, multiple Omnaths, a couple Risen Reefs.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up, game two, I basically stuck a Teferi, and then he killed it, stuck a second Teferi, he stuck a Teferi, and then I reanimated, and he was dead.
Yeah.
You're done. And then game three, we traded back and forth, really tight, really close. And we got to the end of the game, and I basically won by going Evoke, Muldrifter, Ephemerate it twice.
Yeah.
And like, hey, we were trading one for one, and I've drawn eight cards.
It's just done.
GG.
And then, that's one of the things I'm not a huge fan of with those value decks is they quite often just dirtle, and against something that has a really strong game plan that's not relying specifically on card advantage, mm-hmm. like you have to disrupt them, then kill them.
Yeah, every single time you have to stop, like, every single time.
You need disruption and a threat. You can't just sit there and dirtle because if you let them do their game plan, it's almost always stronger than whatever you're going
to
do.
One of us has an I win button.
Right.
And I only have to push it once. And that's basically what happened each game. I think he was able to solitude one of my Archons, mm-hmm. but at that point that got me down from like, 10 up to like 20.
Yeah, it basically the game.
I'm up on cards again and I was ready to go. Like, yeah, he... obviously, the deck's very powerful, and I was able to stop it at a couple critical moments. I caught him on a cracking a fetch land, Ephemerate, kill your Omnath, evoke the Solitude, crack a second fetch land, Ephemerate the Solitude, cutting him off a mana that turn, and I think I really kneecapped him a little. But yeah, it's one of us gets to push an I win button. It wasn't him. He had a couple times where he kind of got in control of the game, a few kill spells here and there, to go back. Voidrend came in clutch a couple times. Just that 3-mana uncounterable kill the thing. I thought that card was great. I think it's good. I think going forward, it's my last thing I say on it, and we'll start it because we're 20 minutes in. I think Grief is the weakest card in the deck, and I think I'm going to replace it. I had a few games where I went turn one Grief Ephemerate, and those were the games I lost.
Yeah.
I just dedicated too many resources to Thought Seizing 3 times, and it wasn't enough to kill my opponent. So I think
not advancing your game plan at all.
So I think I'm going to take some number of the Griefs out and replace them with maybe some more Teferis, maybe one more Teferi, and 3 Priest of the Fell Rites, which is basically a 2-mana creature that you can tap, sacrifice, reanimate.
Gotcha.
And it also has Unearth for 5. So you could Unearth it, tap, sacrifice, reanimate. All right. Sorry, guys. I really wanted to talk about that because I did good in the tournament, and I had a lot of fun doing it.
It's a bit of a rush, isn't it?
You should have seen our Discord. I was going crazy in the Discord. It was... one more thing, I guess. So I felt bad. It always feels bad clinching a close game against someone and coming back because I've been in his shoes, and just that thought of, like, I guess he drew like 6 lands in a row at one point. It's like, fucking course. Yeah, cool, whatever. I've been in his seat. So after, like, hey, good games, it's fucking close. He gets up and leaves. I look over at Ethan and I go, we fucking did it, man. We fucking did it. Because we've been talking for weeks about, we'll drive an hour, we'll 0-3, and we'll fucking leave. We'll go get some food.
Yeah.
And we actually went, we cashed. And we agreed to split. I decided it'd be fun. It'd help even it out for everybody. So we decided to split payouts. So he got away, walked away with a cool $100.
Well, it also makes it a little easier to sit there after you've lost every single round.
He's lost. Yeah, he went, unfortunately, he did get a bye and went 0-4.
Yeah.
Well, with the one bye.
When we went to Ohio, I was in the same boat. So, like, you and Derek had basically, were out of the top 8.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still playing, and I'm like, I'm just sitting there going, like, these guys want to leave, and we're 4 hours or several hours from my house. Like I feel bad still winning.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to
it's like, well, and at that point, he's rooting for you to win because he's got money on the line, too.
Yep. And we get to help Ethan pay some rent, so... worked out really well. We had tons of fun. It was a super fun weekend. Alrighty, let's do this really quick. Planesuckers Podcast, Monday, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard. Planesuckers Pod, or twitch.tv/Planesuckers Podcast. Monday is your standard podcast. Wednesday is your Commander Craft. Discord.planesuckerspodcast.com. We still have a channel in there, and we're still pretty active in it, so you check it out. Especially, I believe it's July 8th, but join the Discord and keep an eye out. Will and Aramis have purchased a collector booster for Double Masters.
Wow.
They're going to open it on stream. Before they open it, we're going to take votes on who wins, who's going to get more value. Whoever wins, whoever voted for them, who chooses them as their champion, they're going to draw a random name. They get all the cards.
Oh, wow.
And you and I can play, actually.
So there's just no reason to not vote for somebody?
Just hop on. You have to be there when they finish. That's it. But yeah, hop on, vote for Will or Aramis. Whoever pulls more value, they will then take that group of people, pull a random name, and mail the cards to them. So it'll be awesome. A lot of fun. Obviously, it's fun watching these super cool packs get opened. It'll be fun watching them rip some super sick cards out of there. So check it out, guys.
Yeah, and then they're going to give away several hundred dollars.
And several hundred dollars, for sure. The other thing I want to give a big shout out to is our patrons, Empra, who is the person who gets our stuff on Reddit every single week. So if you see us on Reddit, that's him posting, and he does a great job of giving some great modern commentary and a lot of good legacy commentary as well. We've got Ramblin' Rogue, Derek and Joe. Derek and Joe are with the Family Gathering podcast. They've basically been with us since day one. They've been Matt's friends for 20 years. We're huge fans of theirs. They're huge fans of ours. I always recommend everyone check them out. We've even gotten some fans of theirs and sent some of our fans their way. We've got Eric. We got Monowolf. Monowolf last week let us talk about his really cool Pauper deck that I believe he told us in the Discord. He's already ordered some new cards. He's revamping it, rebuilding it. Really excited to see what comes out of that. And our newest patron, Ethan from Head to Head Games, from the Card Shop. It's good to see you, Spirit Richard. We're happy to have you here.
Yep.
And anyone who listens to the Card Shop will know what Spirit Richard means. Alrighty, Matt, I think I got everything covered. Let's quickly go through, and I think it'll be easy to go through it quickly.
Yeah, this shouldn't take long.
How's Legacy looking?
This week, Saturday and Sunday, both looked pretty mediocre. There was also leaving the Legacy Open. Mm-hmm. It was a 5K, I believe.
They had a 5K with, I think, 116 people show up.
And if I remember correctly, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but if I remember correctly, the percentage of Blue-Red Delver stays about the same all weekend, regardless of the event.
Gotcha.
It was somewhere around 20 to almost 30% in each event.
I'll pull up their top eight real quick. I do have quick access to that.
But
we'll go through their top eight. Yeah. I'll just give you the deck list and or the deck names. But we'll still use the challenge because we have better data for the challenge.
Yeah.
Let me get to first place here. So first place, surprise to nobody, but tons of credit to Mike Munchbach for bringing home with Blue Red Delver. Then we had in our, I guess I don't have second place. I'm sorry. I didn't see second place get posted. So points to Mike. I'm sorry for second place. Third, fourth was Blue Red Delver and 8cast, and then fifth through eighth, because they're all kind of the same, was Yorian D&T, The Epic Gamble, which is basically Mono Red Storm, Naya Depths, and Tess.
Gotcha.
So tons of credit to them. Obviously, there's tons of information on the Leaving a Legacy Facebook page and some on Reddit. We'll have more data coming from that soon, I'm guessing, because they're working with Joe Dyer. It just wasn't out at the time of this recording.
Yeah, I do have a little bit of data. The top three decks, I think there was around 100 or so entries.
I saw 115-ish.
Yeah, something like that.
110.
Looks like there was 14 Jeskai Control, 11 8cast, and 11 Blue-Red Delver.
So, okay, so Delver wasn't even first.
Delver wasn't even first.
So that's only like 10%.
And the funny thing is, like, Jeskai Control, we haven't seen much online.
Mm-mm.
It hasn't been performing super well online lately. I mean, that just kind of goes to show you the paper meta is not always going to be reflective of the online meta. So always keep that in mind. But anywho, as far as the Sunday challenge goes, we've got Archon bringing it home with four color control. This is four color minus or doesn't have green. That's what it's missing.
Yeah.
So,
which is an interesting choice. Black has traditionally been the weakest color in Legacy recently.
Yep. And he's playing some old school cards in an old school format. So sounds kind of cool.
This is like a fun list.
Yeah, this, like, I was going through this. I'm like, this is kind of, it reminds me a lot of Check Pile from back in the day, where a lot of the, almost every card in here is a 2-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you've got Baleful Strix, Snapcaster Mage. Those are kind of inherent 2-for-1s.
Yep.
The Planeswalkers, we've got Three Fairy and Jace the Mind Sculptor. They're not necessarily 2-for-1s, but they quite frequently are.
Three Fairy is almost always a 2-for-1.
Yeah.
And Jace almost always is a 2-for-1. Almost always pays for itself right away with that Brainstorm.
Yeah, like you were talking high 90%.
Yeah.
They're just not necessarily automatic. Then we got Brainstorm, Inquisition of Kozilek, something we haven't seen in any list for a while. That's primarily a modern card.
So
only in that spot you'd see something like Cabal Therapy or
Duress. Cabal Therapy or Thoughtseize. But one of the I see Inquisition of Kozilek more often when you're running a lot of Snapcasters, because I've heard from Callum, who works with Julian a lot, that when you're planning on doing Inquisition, Snap Inquisition, the life loss is very real.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about four life there.
So,
and you're the control deck. So
that is a real thought you see people starting to make when they are planning on snapping that stuff back. They want to run Inquisition over Thoughtseize. You're not going to get the dragon, unfortunately, but the life total matters.
Yeah. For Ponder, Three prismatic ending. Again, if you're playing on a blue-white X control deck, I mean, going into four colors makes prismatic ending even better.
Very good.
Four swords, again, duh. Four expressive iteration.
Duh.
Now, this is the one. We got Hymn to Turok is back. We got three copies. This isn't some like, you know, we're going to chuck one in there. This is three full, like three copies of Hymn to Turok.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something we've seen in a long time.
Nope.
Basically since Veil of Summer.
And it's the weird relationship with Hymn and Veil. People talk about this all the time, where because Veil makes him so bad, Veil makes him unplayable. And then when him is unplayable, Veil becomes unplayable. And then that makes him playable again. That makes Veil playable again, which makes him unplayable again.
Yep.
And we're just in that lull where, like, if people are going to start playing black, which if this deck starts to spread, just put Veils back in your deck. It's kind of like Stifle.
Yeah.
If you just play around Stifle for, like, 3 weeks, then no one will play it anymore. There you go.
Yep. And him is always, at least for the past few years, has always been kind of on the cusp of playable. And I think a lot of that isn't necessarily the card itself, but just black just has been getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, outside, as far as like mono black cards, it's a decent card, but like going into black when you could be splashing into red or like white, like just almost every other color is better.
Yeah.
And most, for almost anything.
That's what we've hit. It's just like,
with double black, you have to go hard into it.
Black doesn't buy you enough these days. And the problem with Hymn to Turok is when every card off the top, or not every card, but enough cards at the top are I win buttons now, it's just, you can't just be winning on these like resource exchanges.
Yep.
Because your opponent eventually is going to rip a Murktide. You're not going to have the answer this time.
And they kill you in two turns.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like, you could look at this deck and almost immediately see how it would pivot to being like, take out the black, add the green, where you'd just be like, well, I don't run Baleful Strix, I run Ice Bank Waddle.
Now, in fairness with that, you do have to run a lot more basics and be fetching more basics.
You do.
And by more basics, I mean a basic.
Right, but the thing is like, those, all that is, we've talked about it before, all that is red Bant. Like, mm-hmm. that's just, you just run a Bant control list, and it has a couple, like, Volcanics or whatever to cast Expressive Iteration and your Blasts from the side. So, like, whereas if you have Hymn to Turok and Culligan's Command, which is the next card I was going to mention, like, you're talking about four pips that are not blue.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, or white. Like, you have to dedicate land to this.
Yep.
And in modern Legacy, that's just, I just don't think those cards, typically speaking, are good enough. That's why we don't see them very often.
Yep. They just been power crept out.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they're, don't get me wrong, just as much as the next guy, I love seeing like Snapcaster Culligan's Command.
Oh yeah.
Like, that's awesome. But I don't think it's just, I just don't think it does enough to be widespread. Sideboard, we got the typical stuff, Hydro Blast, Meltdown, another prismatic ending.
The things you've basically seen a four.
Everything
color
you'd
soup.
Probably assume they would have.
Plague Engineer,
a Stony Silence. So nothing particularly spicy in the side. But yeah, this is just a kind of deck we haven't seen in quite a while. In second place, we've got Tess.
The Epic Storm.
That's what Tess is.
I know. Well,
yeah.
Sorry. There was a time in my life, Matt, when I didn't know what Tess was. I mean, there's so many fucking acronyms in Legacy. When I started listening to content, people would just say that. Tess, Coder, Ant. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't. And you can't. What do I Google? Ant. Magic Ant. Because if I Google Magic Ant or MTG Ant, it'll show me an ant list. I don't know why it's called Ant.
Right. Yep. So, anywho, we've got Tess.
The Epic Storm.
Yep. Again, Veil of Summer in there. So, I'm...
One Galvanic Relay in the main?
Yeah, one Galvanic Relay. Typical stuff. Echo Veyons.
I don't know if Defense Grid in the main is normal. I feel like Defense Grid is usually a sideboard card.
I've seen them in the main. It's one of those like flex slots. It doesn't surprise me that it's in the main, given that 30% of the meta is at minimum. Yeah. 30% is Blue Red Delver, and then another 30% is also running Force of Will.
Rough.
But yeah.
$6,000.
Nothing particularly spicy here either. Sideboard, Carpet of Flowers, Chain of Vapor. We've seen a lot of the stuff before. More Galvanic Relays in the side.
A little off topic. I was listening to Limited Resources recently, and they were talking about Mirage. They were doing a fun throwback set review of Mirage.
Yeah.
and they were talking about Lion's Eye Diamond and how it's the most expensive card in the set. And it was they were with TBS, so it was Marshall, LSV, and TBS. And he was like, yeah, that card's like well over $100. And Marshall was like, yeah, mid is like $575.
Yeah. Well over.
Well, yeah. And it's one of those things, if you don't look at these cards or be buying them, you don't recognize that. But yeah, it's a little out of touch with the price of Lion's Eye Diamond there.
Yep. Well, and I mean, if it's one of those things where, like, you just don't want to be Googling the price of reserve list cards.
No, you don't, because you're tempted to sell yours, and you're reminded you're not going to be buying any.
Yeah. Third place, we've got Blue Red Delver.
No, we don't. There's some Delvers in this.
Still called Blue Red Delver.
I know, it's pretty funny. It's still labeled
it was
is it
called
Delver.
Blue Red Delver the entire time Ragavan was legal.
Yeah.
This has actually replaced Delver with Ledger Shredder.
Uh-huh.
There's several Delver lists, 6th, 7th, 9th, and 10th. I haven't looked at them all, but I think the ones in 6th and 7th didn't have Ledger Shredder.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm not surprised to see people trying this out, but I'm also not convinced that Ledger Shredder had anything to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's probably close enough to Delver that the power of Murktide Regent, DRC, and the cantrips is going to carry this deck regardless.
It gives you that you can play a couple 8.5 instead of a 10 or a 9.
And you're still, like, you lose a few percentage points, and now all you're doing is playing a deck that's as good as everyone else.
Yeah.
So
as good as, I mean, it's still mostly as good as the other Delver decks, just a little worse maybe, and now you're tighter play, better draws.
I'm not convinced with Ledger Shredder in Legacy. It's seeing decent play in Modern and in Pioneer.
I'd love to see it get cheaper, because I do want to run it in my Esper Reanimator deck, but Emperor on the Discord was like asking if I ran it, and I was like, nope, I didn't buy them, and I refuse to pay $20 a piece.
Yeah, so.
And so I'm just going to keep running OG Esper Reanimator.
Yeah.
And my Reanimator, I don't do none of that, like, diluting it and running a Stoneforge package.
No, it's just Reanimator.
No. I just want to put Archon into play and Ephemerate. That's all I want to do.
It is, this deck, this is the kind of no Delver list. It's not a straight just replacement for Ledger Shredder. It does only have two Dazes, and it's got two Predicts in the side.
Mm-hmm.
So
the Mystic Sanctuary.
That is notable. So it's trying to play a slightly grindier games, mm-hmm. a little less aggressive, but... again, these aren't, in my opinion, wild variations. Fourth place, we've got lands.
It's a Punishing Fire lands.
Yeah, this is kind of old school.
Mm-hmm. So we've got two Punishing Fire, two Elvish Reclaimer, the Crop Rot, the Life from the Loam, Endurances, a Urza Saga Wish Board. That's not called Wish Board, but Wish Targets.
Yep.
Beyond that, it's relatively similar.
Pretty standard.
I'm sure there's some minutia here in the specific land base.
I don't see anything particularly exciting. It's Field of Dead, which is, again, that's kind of standard.
It's a super solid alternate win con for these decks if you're not going to go for a 2020 Merit Lodge.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like there's anything like groundbreaking in this list.
Mm-mm.
That we haven't talked about before.
Just leaning into that Punishing Fire is a little more rare.
Well, and we haven't seen straight lands in a while, like top eight. We've seen like eight molts do well. We've seen like Green White Depths do well. It's been a while since
lands
control has really shown up.
This is missing one thing that's really relevant, actually. There's no what's the two in a red that exiles a card when a land comes into play? Valakut Exploration.
Yeah.
There is no Valakut Exploration in this deck, which I'm guessing the Punishing Fires take the slot. That's a surprising divergence to make. That was one of the best additions we've seen non-land to the deck in a long time, Valakut Exploration.
Yep.
And that would allow those decks to sometimes draw three or four cards a turn, and just also bolt somebody at the end of turn.
Mm-hmm. Fifth place, we have a Reanimator list.
Wizard. Part of the group now.
Just looking at it, I don't see any of the normal shenanigans.
Sarah's Emissary. That was the card I was talking of earlier.
Yep. So we've got four Grief. That seems to be pretty standard. They've went with the four Unmask as well. So they're going hard into the paint with discard. Chancellor of Ranax.
Only one Chancellor. So
up on the three Grief. Three in the side.
Up on the Grief, down on the Chancellor.
Yep.
And then, put him in the side to bring him in when it's really important.
Archon of Cruelty, two of those. And four Grizzlebrand.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got the typical Reanimator stuff, Dark Ritual and Tomb, Faithless Looting, Reanimate, Thoughtseize. That's the rest of the package is pretty clean. This doesn't look like the Tinfins version.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's just pure Reanimator. Get out that Grizzlebrand or that Archon or whatever.
Sideboard looks pretty standard too.
Yeah.
Nice, though. I like seeing Reanimator again. We haven't seen Reanimator top 8ing regularly in a while.
Yeah, it's been...
I'm ready for it to come back into cycle.
Yep. Well, and again, it's just another one of those decks that's punished by Delver, where it's just that... Because like I was saying in Modern, when you're talking about trying to disrupt a Reanimator plan, you have to disrupt them and then kill them.
And then kill them.
That's what Blue-Red Delver does.
Yeah.
Like, it's got free counter magic.
It's interesting, though. We did see Reanimator pop off a little bit in the Delver era. We had a whole like month of Reanimator going crazy, and I think it was because of they went to 8 unmask effects, and so like Reanimator moved much more. And I mean, it already was a force it, and it got more card disadvantage, more make it happen, more force it through.
Yeah, well, they're basically pushing all in at that point. They're going, I am going to dump my entire hand.
Yeah.
I'm going to thought seize you twice.
Every single resource is going into
right.
this.
Right, as opposed to like kind of hem-hawing, having, you know, a little more consistent of a game plan.
Because Delver does have a good matchup against Reanimator, and right in the middle of Delver hell, Reanimator was sweeping top eights for a while.
Yeah, and it also, that extra discard and stuff does help against other combo decks.
It does.
So you can...
To help buy you the time, because we talked about how Reanimator is one of the most powerful, like raw power level Reanimator or combo decks, but it's also a lot slower sometimes than the other ones. Like Grizzlebrand still has to attack for twice.
Yeah, you don't like getting Grizzlebrand out. Like, is very strong.
Tess only storms off once.
Yeah, and a lot of times you got to attack three times.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's
like you can sometimes do it against certain decks, like if they're using heavy life total stuff, but like there's a lot of times where Grizzlebrand has to swing three times.
Yeah, when your opponent doesn't just scoop to Grizzlebrand, you're still a long way from the game being over sometimes, especially again if they're playing those combo decks like Ruby Storm, Storm, Ant.
Yeah, and they just don't care about what you're doing.
Show and Tell can beat it a lot of times.
Yeah, there's a lot of times Show and Tell can just go rip, rip, have an Emrakul, and all of a sudden your Grizzlebrand looks kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
6th and 7th, like I said, are Blue-Red Delver decks. They look... the 7th one only has one Delver, and like it's got a Stifle. Like, I'm not going to spend all day talking about these Delver decks. So 6th and 7th with Delver.
6th looks for sure pretty standard what we've been seeing. The one Brazen Borrower, the spell suite looks pretty similar. 7th has a little bit of wiggle room. Some Delvers came out. Some spells came in.
Yeah. And rounding out the top 8, we've got Fluffy21 with elves.
Oh, Fluffy gets named, huh? Cool.
Sure does. Any elf player gets named. That's just how this works.
I guess if I see an Azorius Controllers, I'll probably name them too.
Here's the deal. Everyone has their biases.
Yeah.
Mine's elves.
That's fair. I think that's a known fact.
Yep. Just looking at it, we've got Nettle Sentinel Heritage Druid elves as opposed to Elvish Reclaimer elves. Mm-hmm. Two Crater Hoofs in the main. That's the second Crater Hoof is almost always a flex slot, so you can have another Crater Hoof or an Archon or Progenitus. Sometimes people run in the main. We've seen that stuff like that. You've got a couple flex slots there.
I didn't talk about this, so I want to give a shout out to Sidenorna, who's been one of our oldest fans. He's been with us for a very long time, supporting us, talking with us, helping us like curate our content and blah blah blah. Well, he put up a really cool tournament he was running at his local LGS. He did 3 rounds of Swiss. He had some people bail, unfortunately. But he offered for me to come on and do commentary this weekend on his Twitch channel, which was a ton of fun. And unbeknownst to me until the day of, not only was I coming on to do some sweet, sweet coverage, the man, Anurag Das, jumped in for the last game. And we got to do coverage together. It was one of the pinnacles, one of the highlights of my Magic career, was getting to do coverage with Anurag Das, the man. And so I was joking with the other, I think I passed my interview because I got a friend request from Anurag.
Nice.
I might be getting invited back to do coverage elsewhere. So I'll make sure and keep our Twitter and whatnot whenever I'm going on with Sidenorna and his recurring tournament to do coverage. And I might be able to let you guys know if I'm going to do coverage at a larger tournament.
Yeah, it was great fun. Sidenorna also won. He went 3-0.
Yep, he clean sweeped with elves.
With elves. So I watched all of your game. I was in the chat chatting, especially given the context of everything. I could, you know, chime in with elves knowledge pretty well. But yeah, it was great fun to watch.
Commentary was kind of shitty, but it was okay.
Well, in your defense, and I'm not saying it was shitty, but it's difficult to be on there by yourself.
Yeah, I was alone
for the first 2 rounds. You were by there, which is I was trying to feed him some. I couldn't have. I was unable to commit to being on, so I didn't want to mess up the game plan by either bailing or not.
Yep.
So I was on there, and I was trying to like throw in some prompts to talk about into the chat.
Yeah.
But I couldn't commit to being on there to help commentate. But given that there was only one of you, like, I thought you did well.
Yay.
So
other people said they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Shockingly enough, I enjoy talking about Magic. Yeah. That's Honorog hopped on. He's like, hey, what you guys doing? And I'm like, well, I'm doing my two favorite things in the world. I'm watching and talking about Magic.
Yeah. So we've been pretty busy the past few weeks, or this past week, and this was pretty busy.
For a couple of weeks, and the last couple of weeks I've been planning, getting all this stuff organized. So it has been a hectic few weeks.
Anywho. But
let's wrap this up.
Yep. So we've got, like I said, the creature suite's pretty standard. Going down in the spells, again, pretty standard. Four Glimpse, four Green Sun Zenith, three Once Upon a Time. That seems to be where people have settled in the current meta on Once Upon a Time. Three Natural Order, again, that's pretty common as well. The lands, we got three Biseiju. That's probably the newest pickup that Elves has gotten. It's a good pickup. It's not really anything super spicy, though. Sideboard, you can tell it's kind of built to beat Delver.
Yep. Do three Mindbreak Trap.
Yeah. Well, that's Mindbreak Trap's pretty common in the Elves sideboards. I mean, that's basically what you have to do against Storm.
Yeah, that's your only option, you've told me.
Yeah, you are consistently at least a turn slower than Storm, and they have Disruption. Like, I personally don't think, I was going to mention this, there's no Thought Seizes in here, there's no discard.
There's no Assassin's Trophy either, is there?
Yeah, this is basically the anti-combo, anti-Delver. We're not going to care about fair matchups.
Yep.
We got Progenitus to carry us in the fair matchups. And in my opinion, Elves has a decent advantage in most fair matchups anyways. So we're going to beat Storm and Reanimator, which again, Mindbreak Trap is actually pretty decent against Reanimator as well. Because they had to go like Dark Ritual, Entomb, Exhume, Mindbreak Trap.
Yep.
You got Grist, again, just a great all-around card. Grist can do some cool stuff.
He's a good tutorable answer.
He's a good, yeah. He basically turns your Green Sun Zenith into a kill spell.
Yep. Very relevant.
Again, Endurance, great against Delver, great especially, against Reanimator.
Especially in a Murktide meta.
Right. Choke, duh. Islands don't untap. Well, 60% of the meta plays Islands.
Seems strong.
Carpet of Flowers, again, give you that advantage. I mean, Carpet of Flowers.
60% of the meta is Islands.
Well, and the big thing is Carpet of Flowers is great against, it's good against a lot of things. It's great against Delver.
Yep.
When you can stick that as opposed to a turn one dork that they can bolt.
Yeah. Well, they're on a mana denial strategy.
Yep. And you just completely rob them of that, and they have almost no way to answer it. And one of the things you want to do against Delver when you're sideboarding as an Elves player is I bring in must answer cards. So like Delver has to Force of Will Carpet of Flowers or the rest of the game plan doesn't work. And at that point, you're Glimpse of Nature, your Natural Order, almost always resolve because you go like Carpet of Flowers or Choke. You throw these things out here where it's either A, they're going to generate you huge advantage or win the game. And if they don't, they're relatively inexpensive ways to clear their hand of Force of Wills and Force of Negations. And then you're free to go off with your Glimpses. So that's the top eight.
Well done, all.
Except
metagame for all the Delver players.
Yeah.
All nine of them.
Unless Reed Duke's in here and we just didn't see him. Reed can play whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's true. That's 100% true.
Metagame summary, blue-red Delver, 28%, 9 copies in the top 32. Blood Moon Aggro, which this is probably just Red Prison, 4 copies in the top 8 or top 32. Then we've got other, and then like lands, death and taxes. Death and taxes we haven't actually seen very often.
I hadn't seen put up numbers recently.
Which, to be perfectly honest, that's one of the biggest things to me is like the fact of the matter is blue-red Delver is 25 to 30% of the meta. Death and Taxes should be like right behind it. It's the deck designed to prey on Delver.
Blood Moon Aggro is there too.
Right.
Whereas in that, Blood Moon Aggro should have a very, very good Delver matchup. And we've had a week or two where it does well and then it falls back down below Delver.
Yeah. The problem I think there is just consistency.
Yeah.
Where it's just like blue red Delver every week in and week out, just does. It's got the cantrips. The deck functions the same way almost every single game.
Yep.
It's not just hoping to rip good top decks. So we've got that blue Green Sun Zenith deck as a two of, eight cast as a two of, and a bunch of one ofs, including like Death Shadow, Painter,
Doomsday,
Green White Depths, Oops All Spells, Elves, stuff like that. Most played cards: Force of Will, Brainstorm, Ponder, Pyroblast, Expressive Iteration.
It's okay, guys. We're just in a Pyroblast format now.
Yeah, I mean, Pyroblast is up to 69% of decks.
Just run 4 to 6 Pyroblast. It's fine.
And that's just Pyroblast. That's not including Red Elemental Blast.
Red Blast, yeah.
So I'm curious. I'd be curious to see the stats on if like they just automatically lumped them together where it would land. Top creatures, Murktide, DRC, Delver of Secrets, Simeon Spirit Guide, and Fury.
Interesting.
That's those red prison cards.
Yeah, it's interesting that like that clear split. You have a blue-red Delver, and then you have red prison.
Yep, and you can see if you go down further, Rabble Master, War Boss.
Yep, and Ledger Shredder, Brazen Borrower. So, and well, the top 10 is literally two decks.
Yep, the top 10 is just two decks, just, you know, dispersed how they showed up. Top spells, Force of Will, Brainstorm, Ponder, Pyroblast, Expressive Iteration. So that's Legacy for the week.
Yeah, it seems like the Leaving a Legacy event was pretty good. The decent paper event, but the online meta, which as I will maintain is the real meta because it's the one that sees 100 times more games played, is still not looking great. But let's go to Modern, the format that is now my favorite in the world because I did good in a tournament recently.
That's all it takes.
I have jumped ship. It was a very combo heavy tournament, and that's, I think, bringing one of the best combo decks to a combo heavy meta worked out well for me.
Yep.
So first place on our Modern challenge on Sunday, we have Yawgmoth, piloted by Dazai.
I think he had it right. Dazai. Yep.
So this is your Yawgmoth list we talked about. We're talking about combo decks. Probably one of the most powerful combo decks in the format. Comparing it to like Reanimator, it's probably a little slower, but probably more consistent because you have some really good tutors in there that I don't get to run, like Court of Calling and Eldritch Evolution. This is running the Giralf's Messenger and the Blood Artist. We've talked before. That is the kind of the redundancy I would be running if I was playing this.
Yeah.
I don't like the
for
idea.
For one card slot, one or two.
Leaning onto one Blood Artist and an Endurance to bring it back if I have to.
And like this is a good comparison towards something like Reanimator. One of the things I like about Yawgmoth is he just wins the game.
Yep.
So like you get the combo off, you dome him for whatever the life total is, and we're done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Reanimator, it's very powerful, but it does give your opponent a chance to deal with it. And so it
generates a lot of advantage.
Yeah.
But that advantage is best taken advantage of in those grindy matches where you're trading one for one or you're playing a value deck. But like against another combo deck, it doesn't, case in point, I never got to reanimate against the Storm player.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it would have mattered.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
you'd be like, oh no, I sacrificed a creature.
Yeah, a lot of turns where he's totally okay to just slam another cost reducer and go off.
Yeah.
So it works out best. Like I had an answer against four color control, and that's the kind of match where I'm up multiple cards, especially with him evoking the Solitude. You're kind of fucked.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of decks where, like, I mean, Living End's a good example where I could easily resolve it against you have to be careful going at Living End. Like, resolving against Living End can just be, cool, sacrifice an Endurance, discard my creature, my turn, yeah, I'm going to Living End.
Yeah.
Now sacrifice your Archon.
Yep.
Like, now you just lose because you're dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to, as long as you're playing around it, though.
Yes, but it's like, that's the kind of thing where, like, yeah, Archon slamming does not end the game.
Nope, not at all.
Yawgmoth slamming often does. Just win the game, we're done.
Yep.
I don't see anything in here. We talked about it a little bit. I don't see anything here interesting or new.
Yeah.
Modern has really stagnated. I enjoyed going to play, and I played against a different deck every round. I had a great time, but Modern Online has really gotten stagnant lately. It's just the format has honed in. I made a silly post about it where I was like, I'm glad when we banned Lurrus, the format didn't just converge onto like four decks. I'm glad we didn't see the complete removal of like low to the ground decks other than Hammer Time.
Right.
But Modern is still great and it's still fun. It's just not as good as it was. Second place, Varro brought it home with Amulet Titan. This is also Amulet Titan. I don't see anything here that I don't expect to see. The two Cultivator Colossus is the most recent pickup. I see them bouncing between 0 and 2. It seems to be just a good expensive creature that's a good backup plan if you don't have your prime time or your prime times have been answered.
Yeah.
You do see Surgicals coming in and out of Modern semi-regularly, and obviously, you know, a turn one Thoughtseize, a turn two Surgical. Probably this is pretty rough for these decks. So
yeah, messes your deck up pretty
well.
Not
at all surprised to see these decks picking up another great 7-mana fatty that does crazy things with lands.
Yep. Well, and even if your doesn't get removed, I mean, a lot of games you just don't draw primetime. So
that's
you're basically going to, quote, primetime's four, like five and six.
5 and 6, yep. Because you've got primetime and you've got the summoner's packs, but yeah, they just doesn't happen sometimes. Sometimes you just don't see any of that stuff.
Yeah. and you need something, because I mean it's a ramp deck. Uh-huh. You need something to do with the mana.
Yeah, that's how ramp decks lose, is they ramp
and into nothing.
Into nothing. Yep. Sideboard again. Don't see anything here that I don't expect to see. Third place was that Hammer Time list we talked about a minute ago. Azorius Hammer Time, definitely the more consistent Hammer Time we've seen, or at least the one we consistently see. So running the Reality Chip, a little thicker in the spell suite with Blacksmith's Skill, Steel Shaper's Gift, and Spell Pierce. We usually only see one, maybe two of those. As for artifacts, we do have the one Cauldron Complete to pair with the Stoneforge Mystic, along with the hammers and whatnot, and a Wishboard with Urza's Saga.
And no Paradise Mantles.
Nope,
which,
no Paradise Mantles.
Someone had... I can't remember. I think it was on Reddit, was talking about it. The Paradise Mantle is really good with the Pure Steel Paladin because you want to chain zero mana artifacts.
I think you talked about it last week. You mentioned that. You had seen it and you mentioned it. And it makes sense where, Springleaf Drum is probably better. It is better by itself, but Paradise Mantle is better when you have a Pure Steel Paladin. Yeah. The deck does revolve around having a Pure Steel Paladin type effect. So it makes sense. Again, don't see anything here. I'm not expecting to see. The one Ginger Brute is kind of interesting. It's some good... Matt uses it in his Modern Affinity list. It's a good little pseudo-unblockable.
It holds
AC.
The cranial plating really well.
Yep, and I'm guessing this holds a sword really well.
Yeah, and he's tasty.
Fourth place is kind of spicy. Fourth place is that list we've seen once or twice.
Basically like once a month in one of these challenges, yep. Calibrated Blast will top 8.
Once a month, six people in a row get their shit kicked in by Calibrated Blast. So this is the same list we saw last time. I don't know if Zekri was the same person that played. It's been too long, unfortunately. But this is Calibrated Blast and Throes of Chaos, which just cascades into Calibrated Blast. Flip your deck until you find a big fatty and dome them for that much. And that's okay when you're running a 12, a 15, a 15, and a 15.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I watched, we talked about it when this happened. I watched Aspiring Spike play against this deck, and Spike did win. The deck is better than I expected at securing those last few damage. With the Sokazan to make a few tokens. Does this one have... I think that one had a man land in it.
Mm-hmm.
The Ramenaps. Like, it actually really is good at... If it can dome you for 15, if you have fetch shocked once, you're at 2.
Yeah.
Not only are your fetch lands probably offline, realistically... the deck is decent at securing another few damage without just casting a Calibrated Blast. And also, if it just hits a throws a, or if it hits Calibrated Blast, sorry.
It has flashback.
Once it hits Calibrated Blast, it has flashback.
Yeah.
And so now you're on a severe time clock of in two turns, I'm casting this again. The deck is definitely better than I thought it was. Clearly, it's top rating challenges. But watching it in action, it was much scarier than I expected it to be. And it felt a lot like... watching him play, how I feel playing against Infect, where like every turn my butt puckers and I'm like, oh, am I fucking dead?
Yeah, as soon as they go to combat, you're like, here we go.
Am I dead? Is this the turn? Is this when I die? And that's kind of how it was playing against Calibrated Blast. Every turn it was a draw and it was like, are we dead?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's like the epitome of top decking a win.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Fifth place, Grixis Shadow, a list we have not seen regularly ever since Loras left. That was a big hit to the deck.
Yeah.
But the Ledger Shredders were the big pickups. Ever since Ledger Shredder came in, we have seen it start to reappear in the top 8 again. It seemed to be this the clear replacement. Ledger Shredder letting you churn through your deck, putting your Crokses in the graveyard, and just cycling through to find what's important. This is a very reactive deck in a lot of ways. You've got some good aggressive elements with the Death Shadow, the DRCs, the Ragavans, but you do have a lot of reaction spells, a lot of control magic going on with the pushes, the Unholy Heats, the Drowns, and the Terminates. And then some other card advantages in there, like Expressive Iteration. Still nothing exceptional, I don't think. Kaito and Unlicensed Hearse on the side are kind of cool.
Yep.
I'm really close to putting Unlicensed Hearse on the side of all my fucking Pioneer decks. I'm so tired. I am so tired of losing to a fucking Treasure Cruise and just being in the mid to late game and my opponent go, I'm going to draw 3 cards and I'm going to go, cool.
Yep.
I guess
and
I lose.
And it's a perfect card against that too, because while you're eating their graveyard, he's just getting bigger and bigger.
Very close to putting it in all of them.
Yep. It's in mine. And I was like, I should take this out. And I'm like, no, it's like the perfect graveyard hate for what I'm trying to do. I'm just going to leave it in there.
It's strong.
And it's also just not a bad threat.
No, it's terrifying is what it is. Once it sits there for like 4 turns, it's terrifying because it's like, it's an 8-8, it's a 10-10, it's a 12-12. That's lethal. Sixth place, we got Crashing Footfalls. this is what we expect to see. Crashing footfalls can't change very much. I don't see it. Four subtleties, the biggest change. We have seen subtleties slowly creep from maybe one or two to now we see decks running a full four of, but it's a byproduct of the deck being restricted, having very severe deck building costs, only being able to run things that cost more than three or more. Anything in here? Cryptic Command. I don't usually see Cryptic Command in here. That's kind of an interesting pickup.
Yeah.
Being a three-color deck, it's kind of weird to see them running. Like, those three blue pips can't be that easy unless you're hurting yourself a lot with that mana base.
Yeah, I think that's kind of just how it goes, though. It's mostly a green-blue deck with, I mean, you don't have to, like, you got Fire and Ice and you got Violent Outburst.
Yeah.
So you need, like,
I mean, you need red. One,
you need,
Violent
like,
Outburst,
a red
Violent
source.
Outburst is definitely your plan A in that deck.
Yeah, but it's very easy to just fetch a Steam Vents. You know what I mean? So,
and then you're good, I guess.
Yeah,
that's
it's
true.
Effectively a two-color deck because, like I said, with Fire and Ice, that's the kind of card where, like, yeah, you do want to be able to cast Fire, but that's not the priority at all in this deck.
Gotcha. Seventh place is kind of an interesting list. The title, Generic Ragavan, it's a Boros list, and by Boros, I mean it has two white pips on the side. So it's just kind of a red, like we were talking about before, it's a red aggro-y style deck that has a grape shot finish is the best way I can describe this deck. And so for we have 16 creatures, DRC, Monastery Mentor, Ragavan, and Burgi. Now, Burgi is that 3-mana creature. It's a 3-mana 3/3. Whenever you cast a spell, you get a red mana. And then it has the backside. It's a 5-mana artifact that you can discard a card to exile the top two, and then you can play them. So best I can tell from the way this deck looks is we've got things like Monastery Mentor, Dragon Rage Channeler, and Ragavan that are going to be low to the ground, aggressive, dealing damage, get your opponent's life total down to probably around 10. If we see a fetch shock, you know, a fetch shock and two more fetches, they're going to be at 15. Sneak in another 5 to 7 damage, get them under 10. Maybe slam a Burgi, maybe not, but you're going to use Underworld Breach and then a lot of cheap spells like Lightning Bolts, like Lava Darts, like Manamorphose and Reckless Impulse to churn through your deck, get your spell count high, and cast a Grape Shot for somewhere probably between 5 and 10.
Yeah, just enough to wrap the game up.
And you point out, with Underworld Breach, you can definitely, if you have the mana, and there's no mana acceleration here particularly other than Burgi, but you can easily Grape Shot for 6 and then just flash back from the graveyard, Grape Shot for 7.
Yeah.
That's definitely a very solid line of play you have access to. Mistress Bobbles also help with that.
Yep, absolutely. Mistress Bobbles probably fantastic in this deck.
Yeah. So that was a really cool list I saw that, like, definitely something we haven't seen. This is a brand new list that this is a really cool brew. This definitely qualifies as a brew where you're mixing this Monastery, Swift Spear, DRC strategy early in the game to, again, I'm guessing, chip some damage in to get them relatively low, but not like scared of Bolt territory, and then just chain off and surprise them out of nowhere with a Grape Shot.
Yeah.
Or Underworld Breach, get some more chains, Grape Shot.
And if all else fails, you can pay 8 mana for a 5/5.
That is true. You also can.
It was funny. Got Jyngatha.
Ethan, I was telling about, like, hey, you have this companion, and he's like, why? And I was like, because it doesn't cost anything. He's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, your deck doesn't run any cards that prohibit it, so you should run it.
Yeah, it costs a sideboard slot.
Which, so I remember when companions came out and people were trying to, like, address how good they were, a common discussion thread was, do you think people would honestly give up a sideboard slot for just a vanilla 3/3? And the answer is, yeah, they would.
Yeah.
Now, this is a 5/5, I get that, but this is a vanilla 5/5.
Like, in this deck, it is.
It taps for a little bit of mana sometimes.
No,
yeah. It's a 5-mana 5/5, and every single deck that can just run Jyngatha just runs Jyngatha. Because sometimes you get to turn 8, you're both out of cards, and you go, play a 5/5, go.
Yep.
Take 5.
Well, a perfect example of this is I was going through, because I've been checking up on Pioneer, generally speaking, and then looking for Boros heroic list to see if there's any new tech or anything.
You're probably not far from running Jyngatha, are you?
The lists that were played over the weekend, they all run it.
Yeah.
They basically what they do is they cut some sideboard cards, so they cut like Feather and Fiendslayer Paladin to run Jyngatha.
Feather seems the weakest.
The main board, it doesn't have anything that you couldn't get. It's just sideboard cards.
Yep.
So like, I haven't gotten a chance. I got Feather out in one game, and I was so far behind, I ended up having to chump block with her.
Mm.
But I got to get a little bit of advantage out of her. The problem is with Feather, I can only bring her in. I'm assuming it's a her. I can only bring it in against decks that just don't have a bunch of removal because you cost three mana. So I'm not going to get that tempo blowout.
You almost never have three lands out anyway. Right. That's a blowout.
So like, I'm not going to spend all of turn three where I should be swinging for 10 to cast Feather to generate some value.
Yeah.
Unless I know she's going to stick. So like against something like a green deck or like fairies or something like that, assuming she resolves, she's going to do some work. Uh-huh. Against fairy or not fairy spirits. I always mix those up because they're effectively the same thing.
Yeah.
With spirits, like she's got a fat butt, so she's got four toughness, so like can block the spirits all day.
And you start getting insane value out of your spells.
Yeah, but Feather's one of those cards that I want to make work, but I'm not sure if it will. Fiendslayer Paladin, I wouldn't give up for anything at the moment. The games that card is good in, it just single-handedly takes over the game.
There's a lot of decks in our private meta that. If you have hexproof from green and red?
It's red and black.
Red and black. It's just like it's unfucking killable.
Yeah. Against I was playing against you last week, and you have March of Otherworldly Light that can kill it.
Yep.
And I would it came down this week against a mono red aggro, and he just can't kill it.
Yeah.
So I gave it a couple Homestead Courage, so making him a 4/4 first strike lifelink hexproof from red. The game's over. Yep. Like he can't win that game. He attacks into it, I block, I gain life. And every turn, I'm just tagging him for 4 or 6, and he got 8-point life swing and 2 aggro decks every turn. Yeah, game's over.
Yep, I really want him to win so bad. Before that game started, I was like, please, I told him, please kill him, please beat Matt. And Matt, right, so Matt, I help sponsor the Pioneer League. I basically match entry fees. And so I use up to $50.
Yeah.
It's $5 a person. I match the entry fee to help. It just increases prize payout. Well, Matt usually gives me his store credit. We pay out in store credit, and he gives me whatever he wins, and that helps me recoup my losses to help keep it going, which is awesome. It's really nice of him. Even though he's playing for the 3-0 to give me more money, I went over to AJ, and I was like, AJ, please, please, AJ, please beat him. And Matt's like, what are you fucking talking about? And I'm like, I don't care, Matt. I would rather you lose than make $10 more.
I got to get some friends that root for me as opposed to against me.
I just want you to be better, Matt. And I want you to play. I want you to face the hardship that make you better.
I have. I've lost a ton of games of Magic. Yep.
Not at Pioneer, though.
Nope.
Let's wrap up 8th place. Demonic Tutor is a very popular name. Did quite well in the most recent trophy race with Aspiring Spike before falling out at the end. Also playing Yawgmoth combo. Also playing Drolf's Messenger. The list looks very, very similar, if not the exact same. I'm not going to compare them one for one, but
yeah,
looks almost the same.
Yeah.
So, metagame summary, we've got Izzet Control, Izzet Murktide, running 12.5% for decks. That's totally fine. We've got, looks like Boros Burn or just regular Burn. It's just listed as Burn. It's almost certainly Boros Burn.
Yeah.
9% with 3 decks. Man, look at this. Look at this. Top 32. Jeez Louise, this is so cool. So then we have Yawgmoth, Amulet Titan, Hammer Time, Death Shadow, Crashing Footfalls, 5-color Omnath, Elementals, all those at 2. Omnath and Elementals are almost the same deck, so that's probably supposed to be 4, but whatever. And then like another like 7 or 8 one-ofs. Super wide meta this week. Even though I complain that Modern is stale, a lot of these decks have not changing. Nothing is coming in to move them because Modern Horizons 2 is so powerful. What are you going to print that's going to unseat Solitude? The format is still really wide and it's still really fun. I said, I still went to a tournament I went to that 1K. I still played 6 unique decks. I still played tons of fun stuff. I had a ton of fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think part of the stale meta, the stale healthy meta, because this is what I would say the Modern meta is pretty healthy.
Yeah,
I think so. Make an argument for some money pile losing something, but whatever.
Yeah,
that's not a hill I'm going to die on. The problem is people play so much Magic now, and like we're always talking about it and reading results and stuff like this. Like, this meta has like 20 different decks in it.
Yep,
there's nothing wrong with this meta at all.
It is, like I said, I like to see a little more churn, but now I'm talking about fighting for the last like 5% of a meta, I guess.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, we should always try to like push towards where we want to be and make your case or whatever, but like, this is one of those things where it's like. You're really tweaking around the edges when you've got...
Again, I still wouldn't ban anything out of it.
Oh, no. And it was the same thing with Lurrus. I wouldn't have changed Lurrus.
I don't think Lurrus needed
this
a ban.
This seems fine. The only things you'd want to watch out for are Murktide or Omnath.
I feel like every time
crazy.
We say that Lurrus didn't deserve to get banned, we lose 2 more Modern players
probably.
As viewers.
On the numbers, it didn't. I've I've maintained the fact that from a gameplay perspective, I understand why people were tired of it.
Yeah, we both agreed that the general consensus I've heard, even from Emperor, who's kind of our modern guy in the Discord, like modern individual games got better, but the meta got worse.
Yeah, it got slightly less diverse. Yeah. You lost a lot of those decks that were like tier two, but competitive.
The Urza Saga decks of Legacy.
Yeah, they got kicked out.
Yeah, Urza Saga props up a lot of Legacy decks that probably shouldn't be there. Lurrus propped up a lot of kind of crappy decks that probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah. So,
most played cards, Lightning Bolt, Ragavan, Expressive Iteration, Unholy Heat, Counterspell. Oh, look, it's Izzet.
Is it?
Is what?
Is that?
Is it?
Yes.
Ha ha ha. No one's heard that joke before in Magic.
Well, the funny thing, the thing that made me think of it is we've got one of our listeners who we work with.
Uh-huh.
He had actually brought that up. Where we kept calling it Is It Delver.
And he could not Google it.
He couldn't Google it. He'd never heard of what the guild Is It is. So
I-Z-Z-I-T. Yeah. So he kept, because he doesn't play Magic, but he enjoys our content, and I super appreciate him. But he quite often just Googles. When we talk about something a lot, he'll Google it to kind of figure it out. Spent weeks Googling I-S-I-T Delver.
Yeah. Is It Delver?
Is It Delver?
Like
and
a question?
Get any results. Yeah. And then I explained to him, I had a long text thread of like how the guilds work and how the shards work, except the guilds have been renamed in Strixhaven and the shards have also been renamed.
The nice thing is the guilds and the shards haven't really, the new names haven't really
No, they haven't stuck very well.
They haven't stuck. I mean, that was the big thing about
it's still Esper. Ravnica. It still is it.
It was the first one to do it. So everyone's like, oh, that's Selesnya.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, yeah. And yeah. Well, that set is probably, in my opinion, the most important set in Magic's history.
Mm-hmm.
The original Ravnica block, but in particular, Ravnica City of Guilds. It did so much for Magic's identity. And I give Morrow shit all the time, but from what I understand, he was like, I think he was like the head developer or whatever for that. Like Ravnica is kind of his baby.
I mean, you think about like Ravnica and the guilds is a lot of the identity of Magic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like I said, people refer to Blue Red as Is It.
Yes.
We're talking about Legacy, where we're playing cards that were legal in Alpha.
Yeah.
And we're calling it Is It.
Yep.
Because that's how influential that was. And on top of that, the standard environment was great. I was playing with Kamigawa Ravnica. That was awesome. Using Dragons and Glare of Subdual for those kind of decks. And then Ravnica Time Spiral was amazing as well. So it was just a great time to be playing standard.
Yeah. They definitely, the legacy of Ravnica, if they never went back, will live on forever in Magic. All right. I did most played cards. Yeah. Most played cards. We did those. Yep. Top creatures, Ragavan, Solitude, Ledger Shredder in third. Man, I wish that card wasn't $20. Endurance and Omnath.
It's nice to see a card in the top five creatures. It's not Modern Horizons 2.
There's actually two of them. Yeah, Omnath isn't either. Yeah, we got Modern Horizons 2. You guys better watch out. You're in trouble.
You've only got seven of the top 10.
Uh-huh. And then top spells, Lightning Bolt, Expressive Iteration, Unholy Heat, Counterspell, and Mishra's Bubble. Matt, I don't really have a third topic to talk about this week. We're a little short on time. We need to get our Patreon episode recorded, and I don't want to encroach on that. Some things have been going on with Magic lately. We do have the full set of Double Masters that's been spoiled. There's a lot of talk about those having super low print runs, but you said you saw they might have a second print run?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's not something I could cite like a source or anything, but I've seen multiple people say that they've seen from someone that there's going to be another print run. How big that is, I don't know.
I know that I'm pretty excited about it. There's some really good reprints coming in this set. I think the set as a whole doesn't have, like, there's a lot of like fluff in it, but that's any set, I guess.
To me, I look at that and I go, this is just this is Double Masters Commander Legends.
Uh-huh.
Like, because Commander Legends Baldur's Gate was garbage. Yep, I think most people would agree on that. There's some cool flavor and whatnot in there. And there was actually, it might not be from Commander Legends, but there was actually a card for Popper Elves that I'll tell you about later.
Yeah.
It's like a mix between Lead the Stampede and Overrun. It's called Meet at the Tavern. You meet at the Tavern or whatever.
Oh,
it's really
nice.
Cool. It's a 4-mana Lead the Stampede or creatures you can control get +2/+2 until end of turn. Yeah, that's really cool.
That's really good.
but anywho, like, seems like Double Masters is just the Commander Legends that everybody, like, you're going through it and like it's just Commander cards.
What they should have done, I've heard this from multiple talking about this, that should have just been Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
It should have just been Baldur's Gate and then this should have been Double Masters Commander Legends 2 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, they really kind of missold people by calling it Commander Legends 2 because Commander Legends 1 had so many great reprints in it. People kind of expected Commander Legends 2 to kind of repeat that, and it didn't at all. There's hardly any good good reprints in that set.
And there's hardly any good cards, like actual good cards.
There's a reason that the professor was opening boxes and pulled like a couple like $40 boxes.
Yeah.
A couple in a row.
That's probably not going to happen with Double Masters.
No.
I mean,
I tell you what, if Will and Aramis only pull $50 out of their collector boxes, I'll eat my Underground Sea.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, man. I mean, you're looking at cards like Imperial Seal is not going to maintain as a $300 or $400 card. That'll drop. Depending on the print run, it could still hover between $50 and $100.
That's what I expect.
Look
at the Demonic Tutor. Demonic Tutor is like a $50 card,
yeah,
$80 card.
There's big time stretches where Demonic Tutor and Vampiric Tutor are between $50 and $100.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after they get reprinted, they usually dip down to around $30.
Yeah.
But the print runs are normally a little bigger, and there's more stock built up.
Mm-hmm.
So Imperial Seal is probably going to be between $50 and $100.
Hopefully.
Which, I mean, for what you're talking about, it's fine.
That's the only thing. It's only ever playable. I mean, I guess you could play it in Legacy, but it's only really played in Commander. It's $50 for a really dope Commander card, something unreasonable.
Yeah.
God, I wish I'd reprinted Crater Hoof.
Yeah, you missed out there. You were kind of banking on that one because you sold your foil. But yeah, you got Force of Negation, Mana Drain. Force of Negation is just a good reprint.
Oh, yeah. I'll be wrapping up my playset of Force of Negation.
Me too. Mana Drain, though, that's basically a Commander-only card.
That was also in Commander Legends 1.
Yeah. So
there's some good stuff. I'm really excited for Commander Legends for Double Masters 2. I will probably be I'd probably be picking up quite a few cards from it, but I'll be buying singles.
Yeah. So the one thing I will say that was funny about Double Masters is they started doing the spoilers,
mm-hmm.
and like they really knocked it out of the park with like Imperial Seal, and there was a couple early spoilers that where everyone was like, "Oh my god, we got the Titans.
Yep.
We got the Imperial Seal. This set's really like, you know, knocking out of the park so far." And then the next few days were kind of mediocre,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was like, "This is bull crap.
Yeah.
Why is like
just super top heavy? They just all the good stuff right away.
If you don't get an Imperial Seal, you're..." And then for the next like 4 days, it was amazing reprint after amazing
like
reprint.
Smothering Tithe, amazing looking Damnation. God, what are some of them? I came like Smothering Tithe was the big Dockside Extortionist, like. They just hit banger after banger after banger. And
Allosaurus,
like,
Shepherd.
Yeah, Allosaurus Shepherd.
You got Cavern of Souls, Bitter Blossom, Concordant Crossroads, Consecrated Sphinx. Again, if you're a Commander player, these are all just huge cards.
Yep.
Like Crucible Worlds.
Oh, there's a new Crucible Worlds?
Yeah, it's reprinted in this set.
Does it have dope art?
It's just the normal two.
Oh, boring.
That looks like it's out in space.
I don't want to pay money for the Masterpiece, but I want a Masterpiece.
Yeah.
Can I have yours?
No. You got the Titans, like I said, Imperial Seal, Liliana the Last Hope, Mana Drain, Mana Vault.
Mana Vault looks good in my
Monastery
opinion.
Monastery Mentor, Seasoned Pyromancer is an expensive card.
Seasoned Pyromancer needed a reprint. The Force Negation.
Renin 6
is huge.
The set is stacked. Assassin's Trophy. Again, Assassin's Trophy is not a super expensive card, but if you pull an Assassin's Trophy as your rare, you're like, that kind of sucks. But that's not...
But
like,
it goes in every Golgari deck you ever build.
Right. Bloom Tender, that's one I'm personally excited for.
Yeah, I need Bloom Tender.
If I remember correctly, there was alternative art for that as well. That looked pretty cool, so I'll finally get to get like a cool Bloom Tender for my Marin deck. Battlefield or Bloodforge Battle Axe. Again, it's not
that
a super expensive card, but it's
expensive
only been
enough.
Printed once, and it's one of those that there's no tokens for it, but actually needs tokens.
Yeah.
So like I was like, I'll just buy extras of these to use as the tokens.
They're
nope, can't do that. They're really expensive.
Yep.
So like this set's really good. Again, Damnation.
So what I want to say is, we call balls and strikes. This is a great set,
yeah,
Watsy.
Wizards of the
Way
Coast knocked out of the park with this. I think the only thing people are going to complain about is you just don't print. You could not print enough of this set within, like, if we're talking like real world scenarios, like you'd have to print a ton of this before it's sitting on shelves.
Have you heard that boxes are already like double price?
Yeah,
they're sold out everywhere. And
Green
people are,
Sun Zenith, there's another one.
They're already kind of like reselling / scalping them for like $400 a box now.
That doesn't surprise me, but.
I think like $375, $380 a box.
The print run was low enough that I think Star City Games wasn't taking pre-orders for singles because they can't.
It quickly became a known thing that retailers were like openly talking about how they can't get as much as they want. That fueled the scarcity.
Phyrexian Altar, another one.
Phyrexian Altar.
Like, you're just going down, just going through this list.
as we wrap this up, I want to pop in real quick and tell Watsy, good job, guys. That's awesome. I'm super happy. I love you to print more, but I'm not going to spit in your face. At least you're printing any. Thank you.
Yeah, well, and again...
And if they're reprinting Imperial Seal, that means they might be reprinting Battle of Xing Chao, whatever, and yeah. I need that.
Well, there was another one. There's the two-mana Final Fortune.
Turn.
Yeah, where you take an extra turn and lose the game at the end of that extra
turn. Yeah.
Yep.
Battle for Glory or something like that?
I forget what it's called.
Something.
Yeah.
But yeah. Points. Points for Watsy.
100%.
They're still a bit in the hole, but points nonetheless.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton of value in
this. Like I feel like I'm at Hogwarts. 50 points to Watsy.
Yeah. You still don't win the House Cup.
No. Nope.
But you got a solid third. Everyone always beats Slytherin.
Of course. Which is hilarious.
Even Watsy beats Slytherin.
It's how much of a joke Slytherin as a school is in that book series
that
I just
finished. Warrior's Oath.
Warrior's Oath. Alrighty. Let's get this episode wrapped up. So one more time, Planeswalkers Podcast. That's twitch.tv/planeswalkerspodcast. More importantly this time, though, check out the Discord, discord.planeswalkerspodcast.com. I think it's July 8th. We're going to do that. They're going to do that live stream. I mean, there's almost no reason to not join the Discord, chit-chat with a little bit, but sign up, pick either Will or Aramis, and take a chance at winning a collector box. It is opened, but a collector box worth of value for Double Masters 2.
You can send me all the free cards that are open
yes.
all you want.
Yeah, so you lose out on opening the cards yourself, but you're going to get some dope, dope pulls, I promise. One more shout-out to our patrons, Emperor, Rogue, Derek, Joe, Eric, Monowolf, and Ethan, a.k.a. Spirit Richard. If you guys want to support us, we appreciate every ounce you guys give us. We have a $1 tier. That's super important to me because I think anyone who wants to give shouldn't be prohibited from giving because they can't give 10 bucks a month. I get it. Gas is $5 a gallon.
Right.
But that's just patreon.com/cantripcartel. We appreciate every bit of it. And we're actually getting ready to record a solid 30 to 40 minutes, including all that talk we had about Dragon Ball Z and Eastern culture fighting techniques.
Right.
In our private Discord, our private Patreon episode. And we'll be talking about it with our people on our private Discord. But I forgot again. If you want, you reach out to us. CantripCartel@gmail.com. Facebook is Cantrip Cartel. Twitter @CantripCartel. Instagram Cantrip Cartel. We basically got it everywhere. We were quick. Now that that's done, Matt, is there anything I'm forgetting?
Not that I know of. I think you got it all this time.
We'll see. I'm sure I'll remember when I'm editing it. But in that case, we will see you guys next week.
All right. Have a nice night, guys.
Yeah, at the end of your turn, I'm just going to cast a Faithful Mending.
Sure.
I'll just discard this land and this Archon. I'll go to my upkeep. I'll play a land, and I'm just going to persist Archon. Resolves?
No response.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and ephemerate it too. So go ahead and discard two cards, sacrifice two creatures, lose six life. I'm going to draw two cards and gain six life.
Fair enough.
Boy, I had a lot of people on Saturday. I won a lot of games to... You got it.
Yep.
Welcome, step on in to the Cantrip Cartel. Jake and Matt chatting meta games while slinging some spells. Casting ales, sipping on blue soup and parting some veils. Glimpse of nature once upon a time. They're telling the tale of the elvish visionaries on the wildwood prairies where the brainstorms are so fearsome, so scary, so legendary. Queering rangers crowns the sylvan libraries for when the greens and zenith would parry the clouds and turn their swords into plows. Let them rotate the crops, abundant growth in the ground. Nourish the life from the loam until it flourished unbound. Seeds of innocence burnished all the birchlorian mounds. Gaia's cradle exhaled, carpet of flowers unwound. Birds of paradise sang, tropical islands of sound. Allosaurus shepherd danced on dinosaur stomping grounds. Jake and Matt pondered deeply all this magic they found. Through their visions doused in serum, they saw only for how to convey these magic stories aloud to the crowds, the masses. Make the voices heard, share the truth, the magic. Through ancestral visions, they felt compelled to draw every single card with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel.